This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. It's Friday, January 19th, 2018. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. A partly sunny day, a high temperature of 42, this hour, 36 degrees.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. Markets are mixed as we kick off the Noon Business Hour right here on WBBM. Let's get the latest on the numbers and more from Bloomberg and Elisa Parenti.
Well, Rob and Chris, right now the NASDAQ and S&P are at or above records. The Dow is lower, though, by 53 points or 0.2%. NASDAQ higher by 24 to 73.20, and the S&P adding 4 points. Right now, 28.02, matching its previous record. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index higher by more than 0.5%. With oil prices sitting above $60 a barrel, U.S. oil output is set for explosive growth this year. That's according to a forecast by the International Energy Agency, and U.S. producers have been accelerating their production. The U.S. Energy Department says output last week was the highest level in 3 months. So we've got crude oil prices headed lower now, down about 1% to $63.39 a barrel. Exxon and Chevron are contributing to the Dow's decline. As for economic indicators, the University of Michigan finds consumer sentiment took a turn lower this month. Back to you, Rob and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, the threatened government shutdown. What kind of impact would that have on the markets? And Amazon is raising its monthly rates.
We'll talk about mortgage rates and the impact on home buying and home building statistics. And then young investors, apparently they're spending more money on coffee than on their retirement accounts. We will talk to the editor of MillionDollarCupOfCoffee.com about that. That's coming up at 12:49. And of course, it's Entrepreneur Friday. All that and more coming up on the Noon Business Hour right here on WBBM.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Some users of Amazon's Prime service are in for a price increase. We're going to get details in our next segment. Right now, a midnight deadline is looming for lawmakers in Washington to pass a bill to fund the government or trigger a shutdown. We're joined by David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors in Denver, author of the book Understanding Central Banking. David, welcome back to the Noon Business Hour.
Nice to be with you.
Let's review in past years these kinds of battles. How do they affect the markets?
Well, the stock market tends to be quite sensitive to the issue of whether the government's going to be shut down. We can see that again today with the negative behavior adjusting almost hour by hour, depending on what the odds look like of a shutdown. I would say there's a slight glimmer of hope in a picture that was no better than 50-50 in terms of a shutdown starting this morning. It's important, I think, that Trump has canceled his trip to Florida, or at least delayed it. That was the first note. And then the House, which said after we passed the short-term budget measure, was going to go home, and then all of a sudden the Republican leaders said, stay here, we may have a vote. That was significant. And finally, the Senate, I think Senator Cornyn, one of the Republican leaders, said they're going to have a vote on a stopgap measure sometime after lunch. So to make a long story short, I'd say the odds are maybe slightly shifting in favor of some kind of a deal that at least carries a short term so that there can be some work done on these issues, which are so severe.
And this is not so unusual that the two sides, go up to the midnight hour and then they settle it at some point.
Exactly. That's the nature of the thing. It is true that if you have a shutdown which lasts, say, a couple of weeks or longer, and we don't have very many of those, you could knock a half a point off GDP growth for a given quarter. That would be the first quarter. But the important point to make is as soon as the government comes back to work, the next quarter makes up for that in terms of a jump in GDP. So all things considered, it seems like a major crisis at the moment. But all in all, it may not be, in this case, at least as big a deal as some fear.
Well, what if, especially in your industry, if you rely on information that the government pumps out regarding the state of the economy on a given day, if the government cannot produce those documents, does it make your job that much more difficult?
Without any question. And that would be the problem if we would get into a knockdown battle between the Republicans and Democrats. And if this thing should last, let's say, a couple of weeks or longer, it becomes really difficult in terms of trying to keep track of where the economy may be. You know, we've had some pretty good numbers on GDP, two quarters of back-to-back 3% growth, and some people are talking about 4% in the fourth quarter. So those numbers are critical to the economic picture, and it would be unfortunate if the government were shut down and we couldn't get them.
You know, there used to be a time, and maybe this is just a generous reading of the past, when this type of brinksmanship just simply didn't exist, and that these funding crises didn't occur, and that at one time it would be a major market-moving event. Has the economy and have the financial markets just kind of learned to price in all of the chaos coming out of Washington?
Exactly, and that's most unfortunate. I would give anything to go back to those times when sensible budgeting was possible. You know, you ask yourself, if the government can't figure out its budget, you know, what good is it? So we've come to a bad moment. I just hope that in some future development, we can go back to budgeting that makes some sense. This is just ridiculous to go. What have we had for the short-term fixes in just the recent past? It does not make our government look good, either domestically or to the rest of the world. We need to see a change.
We'll be watching with you, David, tonight, see what happens, if there's going to be a shutdown. David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors in Denver, author of the book Understanding Central Banking. Coming up, the cost of Amazon Prime is going up for some customers.
Discussing the news affecting your money, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, there's a price hike for users of Amazon's Prime service. Let's learn more from RJ Hadavi, who is a consumer equity strategist at Morningstar based here in Chicago. RJ, let's talk about the customers who get dinged, people who have a membership that grants them faster shipping and access to Amazon Video. That goes from $10.99 per month to $12.99, and the discounted student monthly rate goes up from $5.49 to $6.49. But if you have the $99 yearly membership, that will not change. So what is the reasoning behind the price hike?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing here is that the two groups you mentioned there, the monthly subscribers as well as the student subscribers, Amazon, I think if you look the last two or three years, has probably seen the most growth out of those particular groups. And so as those people come in the fold and start buying more and more products, Amazon's going to have to find a way to subsidize that, and I think that's what's driving the price increase here. You know, this is a story with Amazon. If you look across all the different things they've been doing lately, I think you can tie back all the moves, including Whole Foods and getting into apparel and pharmacy, really driving two things. One is getting more engagement out of Prime members, and so I think that also falls into this particular bucket here. But then also becoming more friendly as a third-party marketplace and more accommodating for third-party sellers. I think if you look, that's kind of what all the things they've been doing, and I think we'll probably see more price hikes with things like Amazon Fresh this coming year as well.
Of the for those who are Amazon Prime customers, what is their number one area of interest? Are they signing up for the video options? Are they signing up for Whole Foods? Are they signing up for Subscribe and Save? You know, what's the thing that they really want when they sign up for Amazon Prime?
Yeah, I think it comes down to logistics, speed, and reliability. You know, that's, I think, first and foremost. And if you Amazon's really changed the way consumers shop, and not only the U.S., but I think across the globe at this point. You know, once upon a time, consumers would just flock to the lowest price possible. Now there's certainly a consideration with logistics speeds. If you know that product's going to show up to your doorstep in 2 days and reliably, you may go with Amazon, even though you might be getting a comparable or even a better price elsewhere. So I think that's what people flock to Amazon Prime first and foremost, is just the, you know, the selection that they have, the logistics speed, and the competitive pricing. You know, this is one of the reasons why people continue to use it, and our best guess is that retention rates are not north of 90% for Amazon Prime members, because there is a selection of video and audio content, as well as a lot of other things that get along with that membership. Yeah, and I think that'll be interesting to see how that evolves over the next couple of years. I think that, I think Amazon's end game here is instead of charging $99 a year, you're going to start tacking on things like unlimited music or Audible, or, you know, as I mentioned, I think they're going to relaunch the Amazon Fresh platform with, now that they have Whole Foods in the tow. And all of a sudden, instead of paying $100 a year, you're now paying $200, $300, even $500 a year with the different service offerings that they have. I think that's going to be one of the major drivers of not only free cash flow, but margins for this company down the road.
If I see a movie or a TV series that I want to watch on Netflix, I can just put it on. It doesn't come with an extra fee. If I see something new on Amazon, I have to pay for it, and I don't like that.
I think that we'll probably also see something, again, the idea that the company will find other ways to package their Prime memberships. I could see a day down the road where the company has a Prime entertainment type package where, you know, you pay $200 or $300 a year for access to all first-run movies like you would, you know, for a Netflix. I think that's a lot of creativity that there's left in the Prime membership program. You know, the past decade or so has been about getting as many members on the platform as they can, and our best guess is there's 80 million Prime memberships in the U.S. today, spanning 65 million households. You get those people locked in and then start finding ways to give them more, but also find other creative pricing tiers. I think that's a big part of the overall story for Amazon.
Quickly, what's your recommendation on Amazon?
We think shares are fairly valued right now, but again, I think this is going to continue to be one of the more disruptive stories, so I don't see a lot of downside risk on this one either, but do think it's a very interesting story to keep on your radar screen.
Thanks a lot, RJ Hottovy, consumer equity strategist, Morningstar, based in Chicago. Still ahead in Entrepreneur Friday, a chef who's taken an idea he had in college and turned it into a company. WBBM News Time, 12:25. Let's get the latest in the markets now from Bloomberg and Elisa Parenti.
Well, Rob, the Dow is lower by 52 points, or about 0.2%. We're at 25,965. NASDAQ higher by 23 points, or 0.3%, pushing to 7,320. That's a new record. And the S&P is matching its highest ever level at 2,802, adding 4 points at the moment. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index higher by 0.2%. Almost all of the downward pressure on the Dow is coming from IBM. It is sinking 4.5%. We've got a check of the grain markets with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
We've had corn down a half to up 2.25 at the moment. December is up a quarter at 3.85 1/4. Beans have been up 9 to down 2 at the moment. Beans for July are up 5 at 9.99. November's are up 2.75 at 9.97. And July wheat's down 2.75 at 4.48 1/2. The Thursday sales were very good on corn and soybeans poor on wheat. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities.
Thank you, Pete. I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are mixed. We'll see what's moving the markets.
Home buyers looking for properties this spring are facing rising mortgage rates.
In Entrepreneur Friday, a Chicago area chef who used his own vegan diet as an inspiration for a line of food bars.
Many younger Americans are prioritizing travel and gifts over investing.
There could be a partial government shutdown if lawmakers in Washington fail to pass a funding bill by midnight.
Wall Street, the Dow down 51, the NASDAQ up 25. S&P 500 up by 5.
AccuWeather says partly sunny, breezy, milder. A high today of 42, going down to the 30s tonight. It's 34 degrees under partly sunny skies, and the noon business hour continues, presented by Old Second Bank.
Mortgage rates have been hovering at near record lows, but suddenly they're on the rise. We are joined by Guy Sakala, who is publisher of Inside Mortgage Finance in Bethesda, Maryland. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Guy. What's the issue here?
Well, rising rates, as you've identified, you know, we have a strong stock market that puts upward pressure on long-term rates like mortgages. We have the Fed promising to raise their rates three times this year. Everything's putting upward pressure on mortgage rates, and I think they're going up. It's just a question of how fast and how quickly we're going to see that happen. We're at about 4% now, which is up from about 3.8 a month or so ago, and probably we could hit as high as 4.25% this year, but probably not in the first quarter or in the peak home buying season.
Does this damage the economy in some ways?
Well, it certainly makes housing a little less affordable, and if you combine that with the tax changes, that also make buying a home a little less attractive from a tax or an after-tax standpoint, it's sure going to give people some pause about whether it's a great time to buy a house. That being said, neither of those situations are going to change anytime soon, so if you need to buy a house, things aren't going to get any better. They're likely to just get worse as the year progresses. And there's also, you know, people have seen good job growth. We have a pretty strong economy now. People are also seeing higher wages, which helps balance some of these negative housing developments.
This should also theoretically take some of the pressure off of home builders who have been struggling to keep up. I mean, they can't find land or workers fast enough to build the homes.
That's very true. We have an inventory problem, both in existing homes and new homes. And to actually have a little decline in homeowner demand is probably not a bad thing. You know, everyone's still expecting a strong home buying year and to be up from last year.
Well, thank you very much for your insights today. Guy Sakala, publisher of Inside Mortgage Finance, based in Bethesda, Maryland. We now move on to Wall Street, where the Dow is in the red today. Let's check on the markets with Jim Welsh, who is a macro strategist and author of Macro Tides, a monthly commentary on the global economy, based in San Diego. Jim, are investors basically watching and waiting to see if there's a government shutdown?
Yeah, there's probably some of that. I think more importantly, Rob, is the market has had a very strong move to begin the year, and I think it just provides people the opportunity to take a breath and a pause. Historically, government shutdowns have not been that material in terms of impacting the stock market. So I think it's more just, hey, an after effect after a big rally.
It's kind of like the slowdown and maybe taking a breather after running the 50-yard dash, basically.
Yes, if one is able to do that, yes, it would be taking a breather after the 50-yard dash, and I think that's, you know, that's a good analogy, Rob.
We have been, of course, watching the economy and since the election of Mr. Trump, and it looks as if it's winding up. What's your view?
Well, there's no question that the economy is improving. Job growth is okay. Business investment has picked up, which is one sector that for years was very subpar. I think we're going to see more business investment as companies take advantage of being able to expense 100% of whatever they spend on new equipment and other investments. So the outlook for the economy in the next 6 to 12 months is solid. I don't buy in personally to the idea that we're going to see 4% growth. Longer-term GDP growth is determined by labor market growth and productivity growth, and what those numbers imply is that it's going to be really tough after this initial surge to get GDP to stay above 3%. But in the short run, it's certainly a positive.
Well, the markets have been very hot and continued to be as we entered the new year. Are you concerned at all about all this buying?
Well, I think the two points. First of all, optimism has reached historic highs on a number of measures of sentiment. So that's a yellow caution sign. But, Chris, the bottom line here is the advanced decline line, number of stocks making new highs. have broadened out significantly, are at very healthy levels. So what that implies is that we're likely to see the market hold up at least for a number of months before any kind of a meaningful correction could take place. I think interest rates could be the trigger for that correction, but I don't think we probably have to worry about anything meaningful in terms of a pullback until we get probably into the second quarter.
Thank you very much, Jim Welsh, macro strategist and author of Macro Tides, a monthly commentary on the global economy based in San Diego. Ahead in Entrepreneur Friday, a chef with food bars targeted toward the vegan market.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday toward planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Hey, it's Entrepreneur Friday, and this afternoon we're talking to a chef who came up with an idea inspired by his own dietary choices and founded a company that produces vegetable-based nutrition bars. We welcome in Chef David Choi Jr., who is the founder and partner of FighterFood.com, based in West Chicago. David Choi, welcome to Entrepreneur Friday here on WBBM. Tell us a little bit about the inspiration for Fighter Foods. I know this is based on your own dietary choices, but when did you decide to monetize it?
Thanks for having me on. Well, it started back when I went to college. I wanted a snack to go, going from class to class. So I made these bars, and when I was doing cooking classes to teach people about healthy eating, I took that same based idea for these bars and created a dessert. And eventually we wanted to sell it because people wanted these in the stores.
And what was it for someone who is vegan or has the vegan diet? What kind of problems do you run into when you try to get that, food on the go, the energy bar, the quick snack, one that actually is 100% vegan?
Well, a lot of things that these products out there that are plant-based, they're very similar. They're, dried nuts mixed with sugar held together. What I made is, there's three things that make this product unique. One, the leading ingredient is a vegetable or fruit puree, like beets. Number two, they're found in the refrigerated section, usually near bottled drinks. And three, it's created by a chef, so it has to pass the taste test.
Your bar is sold in Whole Foods. In what other ways are you showing growth?
We're in Whole Foods, but we're also popping up in gyms, cafes, and we're looking to expand to airports. Hopefully, we have an online business too. People cannot find it in their region or where they live, then they could hop online to fighterfood.com, and we'll send it frozen in an insulated container.
What's your background? What school did you go to?
I went to UIC. I've been a chef for 15 years in the plant-based restaurant. My family started in Chicago. I went to UIC to study accounting, and then I realized I wasn't an accountant because I couldn't stand sitting in an office, 8 hours a day. So I went back to my passion for teaching people how to eat a plant-based lifestyle. So that's how I transitioned back into the food space.
What's your very favorite bar?
My favorite is the sweet potato and coconut. It tastes like carrot cake, and that's our crowd favorite, too.
At what point between the idea for developing this bar and then actually getting the product off the ground through the point where you found distribution and achieved a measure of success, at what point along the way did you doubt the concept, doubt yourself, or have any sleepless nights that it may not actually work?
Yeah, starting in a bar business where the section of the bar is usually in the dry goods section, so it's shelf stable. So our product was different, almost like shipping a bottled drink that has to be refrigerated. So distribution being cold, quality control, it is a challenge, but I think we found that as to be an opportunity to stand out from other companies that are not in that space.
And then lastly, is it gratifying that you're kind of breaking through in a very crowded health food marketplace?
Yeah, I find it very satisfying. Seeing people enjoy the product that I created. you know, it's made everything worthwhile to me.
David, very nice to meet you. Best wishes. Probably some young people out there getting inspired by hearing your story. David Choi Jr., founder and partner of FighterFood.com in West Chicago.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
More than one in three Americans spent more on coffee last year than investments, and that's according to a survey of adults 18 to 44 by the money app Acorns. Let's get some insight with Mark Horner, Fairhaven Wealth Management, editor of MillionDollarCupOfCoffee.com in Oak Brook. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Mark. Is this really different than other generations?
I don't think it is. I don't think it is, Chris. And it's the issue of compound interest and the power of time. I mean, we've done this math over and over. And for a young person that starts at age 20 and saves the equivalent of an expensive cup of coffee until they retire, versus a young person that waits just 5 years who starts at age 25, they could have $300,000 or more less saved for retirement just by delaying five years. So those cups of coffee early in our lives add up to be remarkably expensive when it gets down to retirement.
And what about the younger people who want to take on the board of the stock market and figure that they can make a lot of money? That's dangerous too.
Well, you know, I guess it really just depends on your time frame when you're talking about the risks in the stock market. So as it stands right now, we have never had a 20-year rolling period in the stock market where a person has not made a profit in the stock market. So when you're looking at a 35, 40-year time horizon for retirement, the odds of earning a return in the stock market, if we want to think about it like a casino, are incredibly strong. So I'd say, you know, for young people, the opportunity cost that they're giving up on that cup of coffee is remarkably large.
Is this particularly tied to this generation coming up? And if so, could this be part of the psychological after effects of the market crash 10 years ago? They saw their parents' investments disappear and they decided they just don't want to put their money in the stock market right now?
Yeah, Rob, I think that might be a little bit of it. But certainly we've gone through in the early 2000s and then in 2008, as you point out, some very difficult times in the stock market. And I think there's no question that's impacted investors. Maybe a little bit of reluctance to participate in the current stock market run that we've had. But on the other hand, I think it's very difficult for anybody, regardless of their generation, to fast forward and think about, okay, the cup of coffee I'm getting today, is that costing me actually $200 in lost opportunity costs 30, 40 years from now? I think that's just not intuitive. And I want to real quickly say, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. The message here is not you can't go out and have a cup of coffee or you can't go on a vacation. The idea here is moderation. So instead of going out to dinner, let's say, three times a week, maybe you go out twice. Instead of going on vacation every year, maybe every other year you have a staycation. Those small dollars saved early, especially early in your lives, can add up to hundreds of thousands of dollars down the road.
Mark, thanks so much for joining us today. Mark Horner, Fairhaven Wealth and Management, and editor of, he knows something about coffee, editor of the MillionDollarCupOfCoffee.com in Oak Brook. You'll find past programs later today, a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the all-new Radio.com app.
WBBM News Time, 12:55. Let's get the latest in the markets from Elisa Parenti of Bloomberg.
Well, Rob, the Dow down 48 points, or less than 0.2%. NASDAQ stretching higher by 25 points, or 0.3%, to a new high. And the same for the S&P 500, up 4 points. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index higher by 0.2%. The main reasons that the Dow is in the red is IBM. IBM managed to increase its sales for the first time in almost 6 years, but its progress in cloud computing is not impressing investors. And although card members spent more during the holiday quarter, American Express saw its first money-losing quarter in a quarter century due to a large tax bill. Its biggest spending on card rewards in at least 7 years also took a toll. with business at 25 and 55. Live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.